This is Brock and Salk.
I don't read the internet, guys.
Presented by Carter, Volkswagen, and Ballard.
Take the bull by the hands.
On Seattle Sports Station.
And Brook Wire, you are. And Brook, you are.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Now here are your hosts, Brock Heward and Mike Salk.
Let the fire!
Oh, what a Wednesday. What a Wednesday we have coming up to lead you right into Thanksgiving. Welcome to Brock and Salk. Mike Lefko with you. Brock will join us at 7. Justin's here.
Good morning,
and we
Lefko.
Have a heck of a lineup. Good morning, Justin.
Yeah, you're right. Heck of a lineup.
I'm excited to get into this. I'm pumped. Are you excited for today?
I am, man. I love these Wednesday Fridays.
The Fridayingest Wednesday around.
I love how excited people get this time of the year. I also know how frustrating it can be to travel this time of the year.
So, yeah. Don't travel. That's my advice. Don't travel today. If you are, I'm sorry. Hopefully you're listening to us. If you're in delays or in traffic.
Please.
Yeah, a little bit of patience goes a long way.
True.
All right, so coming up today, we have a heck of a show. A great way to lead you into Thanksgiving at 7:30. Kalen DeBoer, fresh off a new contract extension that UW announced yesterday.
Right.
So we'll ask him about that. And yes, of course, the Apple Cup as he gets ready to experience his first Apple Cup. And then you know what happens from 8 to 9, KJ Wright. But I bet you didn't know, well, you know, no one else knows till we announce it right now, that Super Bowl MVP Malcolm Smith is calling into the show at 8:15.
Let's go. Man, KJ can get some good guests.
Man, he can. I don't know what I'm going to do during that stretch because you have three NFL players and me. So,
well,
I don't know. Maybe Malcolm Smith
starts early.
Malcolm Smith doesn't know me. Maybe I can pretend. You know, welcome him into this show. Hey, Malcolm, welcome. You know, we're just all of us former NFL players here. Let's chat about some football.
From one former NFL Super Bowl MVP to another.
When he calls in, we say, all right, you know, we got Brock, we got KJ, and we got me, Mike Lefko here. So, Malcolm, we're all NFL guys. No,
That'll
be a lot of fun. And then mean tweets. Ooh, sorry. I almost combined something we do on the afternoon show. Mean tweets at 9 o'clock, where Brock has scoured all of his Twitter mentions and found some great ones. I'm looking forward to that. I will miss that strange southern female voice that usually chimes in.
I know. Unfortunately, Maureen being taken by the midday show this week is not represented. I will say she is sneakily in an interesting way represented in Mean Tweets today.
Interesting. Yeah. Okay. There's a tease right there. So can't wait to hear all these crazy voices that lead to the Mean Tweets. And then I think the audience will enjoy a return to form for Ranked. Right? Because you're going back to the core of what you guys have developed Ranked into. So that's coming up in 9:45.
Taking the bull by the hands. I'm doing Ranked solo today at 9:45.
You say taking the bull by the hands?
Yeah, it's an inside joke. It's in the intro of the show there, too. It's not an inside joke. It's something that Heather once said on the air.
Well, we have a lot of those misspeakings that everyone corrects us on, but they're running jokes now on shows. So
that's what we're coming back to it at 9:45. I do think it will be a twist on an old favorite because I'm not Salk. I'm not going to try to pretend that I'm going to pull off Ranked in the most absurd way that he can.
And I can't help you. That's the thing. You guys play off each other well. So I won't be able to help you like he does.
Man. I'm willing to go into the ring alone, start swinging.
All right. So that's at 9:45. So that's what's coming up. 7:30, Kalen DeBoer, 8 to 9, KJ, and at 8:15, Malcolm Smith. But Thanksgiving is so fun. Well, obviously the food and all that. And I love to eat. So it's probably my favorite holiday. But Justin, from a sports perspective, Thanksgiving's amazing. You have a day filled with football, and the NFL has kind of taken it over, but it used to be such a big college football day as well, like this weekend also with all the rivalry games. But Thanksgiving Day itself produced some iconic football moments, and it did in the NFL as well. So when you think about what's ahead, this whole stretch of rivalry games, three NFL games tomorrow, and I missed it yesterday, but Justin, there's a famous 10-year anniversary of an iconic Thanksgiving Day football moment.
10-year
anniversary. It happened in the NFL. It happened on Thanksgiving night, November 22nd, 2012.
10 years. Okay.
And it happened to a guy I believe you've had on this show.
Okay.
So it is. And this is the actual renowned title of this play. Now, this is not me just being crass. The 10-year anniversary of the butt fumble
happened
November 22nd, 2012.
Wow.
Forever immortalized, Mark Sanchez and the butt fumble.
That has been 10 years.
Yeah. 10 years yesterday. So I missed it yesterday, but maybe better to talk about it today because it leads into the stretch of, yeah, this is why Thanksgiving football is great.
Man, I thought you were going somewhere else with that.
Oh, what did you think?
I thought you were going to say we're coming up on the anniversary of the 21st year of another fantastic NFL Thanksgiving moment in time and in pop culture is what I thought you were going to say.
25 years. Now I'm confused.
No, not 20, 21.
21 years.
Yeah, I thought you were going to be going with something that you know that Brock's going to be asking for a little bit later today. I thought you were going to say...
At Cowboy Stadium. Actually, what's that? November 22nd as well? Hold on. Yeah.
Ugh. Yeah. The guy comes flying in with those weird wings. Oh, okay. I'll let that one go because I know Brock's probably going to be pulling that one.
That
back.
Was the 22nd. November 22nd, 2001.
That's what I was going to say.
What a day for November 22nd. So these anniversaries. So you have that. You have the butt fumble. You have Creed. You also have, I have to ask KJ about this because he grew up around the Egg Bowl. He played in the Egg Bowl. And one of the more infamous moments in recent Egg Bowl history. Are you a big Egg Bowl guy? Mississippi State, Ole Miss.
Ole Miss. Yeah. I asked KJ about that.
So one of the more infamous moments in Egg Bowl history happened on Thanksgiving 3 years ago. Now it was a little bit later. It was like November 29th. But now Jets wide receiver Elijah Moore scores what would have been the game-tying touchdown against Mississippi State, except he mimicked a dog doing something to a fire hydrant. They were penalized 15 yards. Mississippi State missed the extra point and lost because of a game-tying touchdown.
Right.
And that actually led to that entire coaching staff getting fired, not because they lost, but because of that season. Lane Kiffin took over, and there's the story of college football since then. So Elijah Moore unknowingly put a lot of stuff in motion in college football, but that's an Egg Bowl moment that I wonder how KJ Wright feels about.
Some good weird football then this
good weird football. Absolutely. There's going to be great weird football. There's also an actual good football moment that happened on Thanksgiving. Maybe... In terms of the upset and the stakes, maybe one of the most famous plays in college football history, Doug Flutie's Hail Mary, 38 years ago today.
Wow.
1984, they knock off number one Miami. Boston College, the Hail Mary to beat Miami. So Thanksgiving. Yeah. They come with the moments. Get ready for some football. Who knows what's going to happen tomorrow with three NFL games and a bunch of college basketball and then college football this weekend. Good day to sit.
I always just think of, when I think of Thanksgiving football, besides being a kid and watching the Cowboys on the couch, I think of Russell Wilson and Richard Sherman eating turkey on the 49ers logo. That's the first image that pops into my mind for Thanksgiving football.
The turkey legs. I love
that. Is how iconic for some reason that moment went and how magical that season was. Everything about that image of Sherman sitting on the logo with Russell eating turkey.
I do miss John Madden and the turkey legs they'd give out. They still kind of do it. It's not the same, though.
No,
but the way they built that up when John Madden was around. So they're really not a lot better in the course of an NFL season and a holiday built around sports than Thanksgiving and sporting events that are happening. Mm-hmm. I know this is not the biggest college basketball audience, but Thanksgiving week and tomorrow and this weekend is filled with great college basketball tournaments. It's an excuse for teams to go to these exotic locations, the Bahamas, the Virgin Islands, Jamaica. They play these great tournaments against quality competition. And there's a big tournament happening in Portland this weekend. Gonzaga will be there. Purdue will be there, which I care about. No one else cares about.
Word on the street.
There's a ton of teams down there in Portland this weekend. So great sports happening. All the football tomorrow, three NFL games, college football rivalries, obviously the Apple Cup on Saturday, the Egg Bowl. We'll get KJ Wright's thoughts about, and maybe, probably not, but maybe if Kalen DeBoer is in a good mood, I'll ask him about his 1 year at Indiana when they lost in the old Oaken Bucket to Purdue. Oh, wait, did they win that year? I better look that up first.
But find out.
He was at IU for 1 year, and there's a pretty big rivalry out there between Purdue and IU, the old Oaken Bucket, which Purdue has historically dominated.
Oaken Bucket.
I'm sure he doesn't care about that anymore, but he will join us at 7:30. If you missed that, Kalen DeBoer joining us at 7:30, KJ Wright from 8 to 9, and Malcolm Smith at 8:15. Plus, Justin's here like always. I'm here. Brock will join us at 7. What a great show we're going to have on a Wednesday leading into Thanksgiving. But there is something that's a little bit concerning for the Mariners. A team in the division just got better. That's what you need to know coming up next. It's the Brock and Salk Show. You're listening to Seattle Sports Station on 710 and seattlesports.com.
Need to know.
15 minutes past every hour with Brock and Salk.
Here's what you need to know. Up first.
The Seahawks got back to work yesterday for the first time since returning from Germany off the bye week. Pete Carroll, you like the energy that he saw.
Going back to work feels good to us. These guys were fired up to be back. They feel good. They feel strong. I mean, just in the walkthrough, they're bouncing all over the place. The schedule that we have this week will allow us to be fresh all the way to Sunday. By the way, we're doing it and celebrating the holiday, too. So they're anxious to get back at it and really test. This is like starting the second half. And so feels like that natural break at the bye, and we're going to try to maximize that by coming out and playing a really good game this week, and it's all we got.
I know Brock was interested in this, and we'll ask KJ what guys like to do during the bye week, because it's a significant amount of time off. You're off for about a week. So Pete Carroll also mentioned that they're not just throwing them right into it. They have to be kind of extra cautious, getting guys back up to full speed and getting ready for the Raiders.
Yeah, yesterday we ran the guys and worked them out in preparation for today. You know, and today we talked specifically about, you know, easing our way into the tempo. And so we're taking a little extra time in individual, and the coaches are all aware of it, and the players have been warned a couple times, let's not try to do too much too fast, too soon, and get ready. And we got a good week here that we can ramp it up. But there's always a little bit of concern coming off the week. We asked our guys to be real active over the week and you know, make sure that they stayed, you know, after. But we still need to be careful today.
The Seahawks are taking Thanksgiving off. Then it's back to a normal game week routine for a Raiders team that, despite their record, has some offensive weapons. They feature the third leading rusher in the NFL in Josh Jacobs, who has 930 yards this season, and Devontae Adams, who we'll talk plenty about today, over 100 yards receiving in each of the last three games, along with 5 touchdowns in those 3 games.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
Well, ahead of the Apple Cup, UW locks up their coach for the foreseeable future. The Huskies and Kalen DeBoer have agreed to a contract extension through the 2028 season. A lot of numbers in there, you know, dense financials of a contract, but a few of the key ones that jump out here. The salary increases from $3.2 to $4.2 million next year, and DeBoer will also get a $100,000 raise every year after that through 2024 to 2028. Now, contract bonuses are also built in for performance goals, achievements like Coach of the Year, Pac-12 Championship, etc. So the contract is out there, I believe, if you want to read all the financials. But Kalen DeBoer gets a contract extension. He will be here through the 2028 season. And last night, the latest college football playoff rankings have the Huskies in at number 13. A lot of Pac-12 teams in there. USC, the highest ranked Pac-12 team, at number 6. Oregon, well, despite losing to UW, they're still ahead. Oregon's ranked number 9, Utah's number 14, UCLA is 18, and Oregon State rounds out the Pac-12 representation at number 21.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
The Kraken are back in action tonight, the final game of their 6-game homestand. Now, it's been 3 straight overtime games, all by a 3-2 score. I was very intrigued to see that. I mean, kind of realize it at the time. You don't think about it until you look at 3-2, 3-2, 3-2. Yeah, 3 straight overtime games, all of them by a 3-2 score. Kraken have won 2 of those, and the Kraken are currently 3rd in the Pacific Division with 23 points. Oh, and Shane Wright, who they recently sent down to their AHL affiliate, scored a goal in his debut last night for Coachella Valley. Now, here's another thing that's getting kind of interesting in the AL West. Hot stove season heating up. The Angels have acquired outfielder Hunter Renfroe from the Brewers for a few pitchers. They gave 3 back to Milwaukee, including one of the best names in baseball, Jansen Junk. And the Angels have already acquired Gio Urshela and Tyler Anderson this offseason. So they're making some moves. Final year of Shohei Ohtani's contract. He's a free agent in 2023. Maybe the Angels are loading up to try to make things interesting in the AL West. That's everything you need to know. What do you think about that? The Angels just trying to get after it early on.
Yeah, I mean, I was thinking, I said this in the show email last night. I was like, does this mean Haniger doesn't have to go be under Phil Nevin then for a year if they sign Hunter Renfro? Is that take him out and take them out of the running for him or what?
Could be. I think they need outfielders, so they might go after him. But, I mean, just one of a few teams that John Morosi mentioned. So Angels, sure. Dodgers, Rangers, and it is the – well, Brock and I talked about this. You know, it's not exactly lying season, but it's also – you have an objective. Anytime news gets out there, it's because an agent is trying to leak it or a team's trying to leak it. So in this case, it seems like Mitch Haniger's agent probably trying to say, yeah, look at this robust market.
Six teams.
We heard the word robust thrown around a couple of times when hearing about Mitch Haniger and the interest teams had. So yep. If you're his agent and the fact that the word robust has been said by various people and in regards to Mitch Haniger, that leads me to think that his agent is telling them, yeah, it's robust.
It's a robust market.
Yeah. Just like the wine, passing time wine. It's robust, which obviously nice. Damon Heward is part of. So who would not know that? Yeah. Robust trade market for Mitch Haniger.
Who would have messed that up yesterday live?
Who would have messed that up? No one would have
offended Brock.
No one would have messed that up, obviously. And he was wearing the shirt, too. Should have known. Yeah. So, we'll see what happens. I don't expect much to happen with the Mariners today. And, of course, you know, I say that, and news will happen exactly when we don't expect it to.
Yeah, sure. Jerry said, though, he doesn't expect much to happen until after the holiday. But the interesting thing is this is the last year of Shohei. So if the Angels do not make the playoffs this year with all the moves they've been trying to make in the offseason – that will mean that entire tenure of Mike Trout and Shohei Ohtani together, assuming Shohei's gone, because I can't really imagine him staying around much longer, will have been somewhat of a failure.
A complete failure. You have two of the best generational talents in baseball.
Yeah, but you also have the Astros in their division.
Well, no, but they haven't even made the playoffs. Like, Mike Trout has played in one playoff series. Shohei Ohtani's never played in the playoffs. And there's you've seen the meme, right? The famous tweet now that... comes up every time Trout and Ohtani do something historic.
Yep.
It's a tweet like Shohei Ohtani homered and Mike Trout did something that Tungsten O'Doyle hasn't done back in 1913, and the Angels lost 7-3.
Yeah. I know Mike Trout goes 3-for-4 with a triple and two home runs. Shohei Ohtani strikes out 11 and the Angels lose.
Yeah, I believe the actual thing was Tungsten Arm O'Doyle.
Tungsten Arm O'Doyle.
And that's what it is. I mean, Ohtani's incredible. He had one of the best seasons of all time last year. And Trout is Trout. He crushes the Mariners. He hits home runs like it's no one's business.
But stay healthy.
They're not good. The Angels are not a good team. So maybe they're gearing up for a move. We saw the Rangers make big moves last offseason. Didn't lead to much last year, but you look around the division, and obviously you have the Astros. They won a World Series. You have the Rangers, who just shelled out a ton of money for Marcus Semien and Corey Seager. And now the Angels trying to be aggressive, so... And the A's are the A's.
The A's are the A's.
So the Mariners, we'll see what they do. There's a lot of time left in the hot stove, and we expect it to really sizzle after Thanksgiving. We're going to get back to football, though, get really into this. Yeah, thank you. Nice sizzle. Yeah. We're going to get back into this Raiders matchup. Play-by-play voice of the Raiders, Jason Horowitz, will join us. And then we're going to dive into why a key defensive addition could really help the Seahawks over the course of this final seven games. That's all coming up next. It's the Brock and Salk Show. You listen to Seattle Sports Station on 710 and the Seattle Sports app.
This is Brock and Salk.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Back in mornings from 6 to 10
on Seattle Sports Station.
Mike Lefko and Brock Heward here with you. Please be joined now by Jason Horowitz, Raiders play-by-play broadcaster on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline. Jason, belated congrats on the Raiders job. How's year one been for you?
Everything's been awesome, which is fun. They tweeted out a video of the overtime call from the booth the other day. And other than having the iced tea bottle in front of the GoPro, which I totally blew that for them, everything else has been great. And yes, if we would like to talk about more Damon Heward and Drew Bledsoe's wine, I feel like Brock and I have probably had that conversation 3 or 4 times before. So I think I'm well versed in that as well.
Yeah, they call it the Apple Cup wine dinner, and it's okay. I mean, Lefko's trying to figure out, is he a Coug? Is he a Husky? Obviously, like you, he's a Syracuse Orange. It seems like everybody, like Benetti, like McDonough, like all the Hall of Fame broadcasters have all been. So I understand his mistake.
We don't have wine up there.
No wine up in upstate New York?
No. I don't make wine up there.
That is not accurate. Do not let him tell you that. We have the Finger Lakes region, and they make beautiful wine at Lake Skinny Atlas. Do not let him tell you that.
They don't have quarterback wine, though, do they, Jason?
Let's see.
Let's do some Donovan McNabb research into his wine interests.
Jason, what have you enjoyed the most? You said it's been awesome, and that's amazing covering a 3-7 football team. But I think it also speaks to how compelling the Raiders have been. They've been in every game this year. So how much have you enjoyed calling this NFL game that seemingly every game comes down to the final few minutes, especially with these Raiders?
Yeah, so that's the first part, right, is that the games themselves, with the exception of the trip to New Orleans, every single game has come down to the final 3 minutes. And for the most part, the Raiders have had the ball with a chance to either tie or win every single game after the two-minute warning, which is really incredible, which I think, Brock, gets to the fact of why all that energy and emotion came out with the overtime game against Denver on Sunday. A lot of people have seen the Derek Carr post game after the Colts loss and the tears and, basically saying all the things the guys do just to practice, as he said, just to go to sleep at night, all the things they put in their body just to be able to do that. And for that to be the result. And what he was talking about was the effort of some of the guys in the team. And he has not, Devontae has not, anybody else that has been talked to, nobody has called out individuals. Certainly speculation about who they're talking about and things of that nature, but nobody has called out individuals. So for them to finally get a game-tying drive to go to overtime and then a game-winning touchdown pass to snap what has been a very disheartening season, it all came out there.
Yeah, Jason, we've been talking about some teams that clearly don't have it and aren't together, like the Cardinals. It looks like they don't play for each other. They have some issues. But for a team like this with the Raiders, when you've mentioned what they've worked so hard to get, how they have come together, when you do win a game like that after some tough losses late, what do you think this can do for building this team's momentum going forward down the rest of the season?
Well, I think we have to wait, right? I mean, look at the Lions right now. They were 1-6. You guys saw it firsthand. They gave Seattle, what was that, week 3, week 4? Everything they could handle. Now, they didn't give them any stops. There were no defensive stops.
There were not.
There were like 100 points scored. But a team that was 1-6 was taking teams like the Seahawks to the wire in a field goal game. And they did that to the Dolphins. And they did that to the Eagles. All these teams that look like they're heading towards the playoffs. And now all of a sudden the Lions won one. They beat the Packers, and now they've won 3 in a row. And they just went to the Giants and beat a team that was 7-2. So, if the Raiders come to Seattle and knock off the Seahawks after the Seahawks had a bye, then you can start talking about what type of momentum. Mm-hmm. If not, then it's just one win against the Broncos team that's got a quarterback who's having the worst year of his life, with a coach who cannot figure out how to use timeouts and how to manage a clock, and it was just one game. But if they do, then we maybe can talk about something for the month of December.
Our pal, Jason Horowitz, your pal from college days, my pal from Sirius Radio.
He's a little older. No offense, Jason.
Oh, he's a little bit older than you?
A little bit older.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
Yeah, I'm 39, class of 05, and I have a lot more gray hair than Brock does.
And a lot more kids. And Lefkoe's got. I think you've now even with me as well. But a great guy. He is the voice of the Raiders. And you were on that call, obviously, in Denver, in Mile High the other day. I watched that game. Obviously, we all do as Seahawk fans. We watch that game to watch Russell Wilson, to see the collapse of the Broncos. And right now, what looks like a top five pick for the Seahawks in the draft in April, which is amazing. But when I watched it, Jason, it looked to me the Raiders style. That was my style, like in the 80s and 90s. It was I formation, fullback, old school football. Is that their brand, or is that Josh McDaniels saying, hey, this week we got to do this, next week we got to do this? What kind of just offense do we expect to see Sunday in Seattle?
So they brought, Josh McDaniels came from New England, and he brought with him Jakob Johnson, who's from Germany. He's one of the few players from Germany in the NFL. And he is our fullback who is on the field about 30% of the time. 25-30% of the time. I'd have to go back and see what the numbers are now. But generally speaking, we have a fullback in the backfield, whether it's a straight eye formation or an offset eye formation, somewhere in the neighborhood of 25-30% of plays. So, Brock, I feel like when you played in the 90s, it was probably higher than that. You know, the Corey Schlesingers of old and things like that, it was probably more like 50%. But you know, in today's NFL, that's a high percentage. Yep. So that was not abnormal. That was our norm. Part of that, though, has been because of the injuries to this team. They, you know, Hunter Renfrow went down in the Arizona loss with a concussion. He missed two games. Now he's on IR with an oblique injury. So he's missed more than half the season. Darren Waller just missed his sixth straight game. We, you know, Foster Moreau from LSU has been a good backup and has done a really good job. But, you know, there isn't really a second tight end for them to go with. Normally, we've been playing a sixth offensive lineman for 20% of the plays. But our starting left tackle, Colton Miller, did not play against Denver. So they didn't do play with Cody Barton's brother, Jackson Barton. They didn't bring him out a lot as the sixth offensive lineman. So they were going with a fullback even more this weekend. And the crazy thing is, in today's NFL, when you've got five or six wide receivers and you're playing four at a time, Raiders don't have that. Like, we have four active wide receivers, and one of them, DJ Turner, I don't think saw an offensive snap. So it is kind of more personnel based, but Josh Jacobs has just run the ball so well this year that they've been trying to be balanced, and maybe to some extent that's even been a detriment. Devontae Adams has complained about that at times this year. You know, first half against Jacksonville, he's over 100 yards, and then he cannot get the ball in the second half, and that was the third time that's happened this year. So, you know, they're trying to figure that part out, but at least for one weekend, it kind of all came together.
Well, Jason, we do have to let you go here, but I appreciate you hopping on. We talked some wine, which I didn't expect to do. We talked some Raiders Seahawks, which we did expect to do, and it looks like a great offense coming to town this Sunday, so it's going to be a good one, but we appreciate you taking the time.
All right, guys, looking forward to it. I will see you there in Seattle, and then, Brock, I will see you in Las Vegas Pac-12 Championship, my friend.
Yes, you will, bud. Oh. Yes, you will. Thank you, Jason. Appreciate you, bud.
See you guys.
Yes, so that's Jason Horowitz, play-by-play voice of the Raiders. They've been a strange team. They really have. They're 3-7. But if you look at the Raiders, they've been in every game, except the Saints game. They got destroyed in the Saints game. They lost 24-0. But they have 7 losses. 6 of them have been by a touchdown or less. And the game that they lost by a touchdown against Jacksonville, they were up 17-0. So this team is just a confusing amalgamation of offensive parts, haven't exactly put it together as a team. But when you heard Jason talk about Devontae Adams wanting the ball more, I understand that, because Devontae Adams is terrifying. And it's something that Pete Carroll mentioned. We'll get to what he said about Devontae Adams in a second. It's something that Brock is going to highlight as well later in Blue 88. But Devontae Adams, you almost need to feed him Justin Jefferson style. The way the Bills-Vikings game played out down the stretch, how did the Vikings get that comeback going? They ran one play. It was called throw the ball to Justin Jefferson, let this freakish wide receiver go up and make a catch. And he did pretty much every single time. So Devontae Adams, if you look at his numbers, he has been targeted more than anyone else in the NFL, which is why it was kind of funny to hear Jason say that he was complaining that he couldn't get the ball in the Jacksonville loss. But Devontae Adams has been targeted 112 times. That's more than any other receiver. 6 more than Tyreek Hill, who has the second most targets. But they don't often connect. So Derek Carr is just kind of chucking it his direction. Not necessarily when he's open. 64 receptions out of 112 targets. I think it is interesting, though, that Devontae Adams on that final play against the Broncos, where it seemed like he was wide open, it actually was designed well. Tough for us to see just in that TV copy of it. But Pete Carroll kind of dug into that, the play design, and why Devontae Adams, leading into a question you posed, Justin, why Devontae Adams is going to be the toughest receiver the Seahawks face all year.
I mean, every challenge that a guy could bring in. I mean, he's an incredible player. He's so gifted and such a great competitor that he seizes the moments all the time. You know, the catches, the opportunities, the big plays. I mean, just look what he did, you know, like last week, and just classic, and an incredible route that he ran and a concept to get open. But he just came through again. You know, you can see why if he's on your team and then he leaves, you're going to have a space, you know, that's hard to fill. I think they've targeted him 40 something times in the last 3 weeks. You know, he's deserving and capable, and whether you know it's, he can tell you I'm running the route almost and can still be effective. So he's a great player. He's the top guy we've seen.
Wait, was that Pete taking a little shot at the Packers?
I think he was. It's like you can see when you would leave somewhere.
And then a little chuckle.
Yeah.
I didn't even realize that. I've heard this clip a couple times, but I didn't even realize that until right now that it's like, oh, yeah. Yeah, he's probably saying, oh, look at the Packers. They're struggling. You lose a guy like that. Makes sense.
No doubt.
Huh.
No doubt.
That's what a game-changing wide receiver can do. And I think he's coming into his rhythm with Derek Carr. There's a reason he wanted to go there. He wanted to play with his college quarterback. There's not a lot of other reasons why you'd want to go to the Raiders, I can't think of. From the Packers, a team that's perennially an NFC title contender, to go to the Raiders in a tough division. But those two have a good friendship. And over these last three games, starting with that Jacksonville loss, 17 targets, 10 receptions, 146 yards against the Colts, a game they still lost, 126 yards. And then last week in that win over the Broncos, 141 yards and two touchdowns. So he has five touchdowns in the last 3 weeks. We've kind of been bantering about who's more dangerous to the Seahawks, Josh Jacobs or Davante Adams. And when I look at that, I know Davante Adams can have a massive game and change the game, but they've also lost two of those games where he's had his massive output. Mm-hmm. So now I kind of think, all right, well, maybe Josh Jacobs is more concerning. Because Davante Adams, he can go and he can get his, and maybe he'll be a nuisance for the Seahawks secondary. But Josh Jacobs, when he runs well, they win. Because in the games that Josh Jacobs has really broken out, 109 yards, he's been over 100 yards four times. 109 last week against Denver, a win. 143 against the Texans. Maybe you discount that because it's the Texans, but still. 143 yards, they won. Now, the game that he had his most, they lost, but to the Chiefs, and just by 1 point. I'm going to call that a virtual win. So Josh Jacobs, 154 yards against the Chiefs. They lose 30-29, and then his second highest output, 144 yards, 28 carries, a season high against the Broncos back on October 2nd. They won 32-23. When I look at that, and I look at the correlation between big outings and when the Raiders win,
yeah,
I think Josh Jacobs represents the scariest outcome for the Seahawks. Because if the Raiders commit to what the Bucs did, just run the ball over and over again, 44 times for 161 yards, that number just still is a glaring red light just kind of flashing, hitting you right in the face because the Bucs were so inept at running the football. I'll let Davante Adams go off. I don't want Josh Jacobs to have a big game.
I agree with you.
That'll be scary.
Yeah, it's a clock killer. It's
yes.
That, and that's... We just can't have it. And we talked to KJ the week before the Giants game, and he said the thing he was most looking forward to is seeing how the defense actually handled a real running attack. And they handled it really well. So now
against the Giants?
Against the Giants with Saquon. So it's this is probably, I guess, going to be the next biggest test because you weren't expecting that out of the Bucs, but they've proved that they can do it, I guess is the point. And I trust the secondary, and if Davante is your only, you're right, let him go off. If that's going to be the only thing you're going to have. But you have to stop Josh Jacobs.
Yeah, he will be the toughest receiver they face. I agree with that. Absolutely. Davante Adams will be the toughest receiver the Seahawks face. But they really have no other options. You might have heard Jason mention that Hunter Renfrow is still hurt. Darren Waller is out.
Yeah,
that's it. They have Davante Adams, and that's it in the passing game. So that's why he's been targeted so much. And that's why he moves the offense through the air. But Josh Jacobs, you mentioned it, Justin, time of possession, too. When you're running the football well, that chews up clock. That gets the defense tired. We saw at the end of the Seahawks-Bucks game, they couldn't get off the field. Mm-hmm. The Bucks had owned time of possession. The Seahawks hadn't been on the field much offensively. The defense is tired down the stretch. Maybe the footing. No, I'm not going to go back to there. But the final 358 was owned by the Bucks. So if you run the football well, you control the clock. And that's what scares me about Josh Jacobs.
With you.
Now, there is one piece of good news for the Seahawks defense.
Give it to me.
And we'll see how much of an impact it will be. I don't think it will be much of an impact on Sunday. But Trey Brown is back. He was practicing before that Bucs game. They're slowly easing him into it. or maybe right after, but he's now back and he's officially going to get some playing time. As Pete Carroll mentioned yesterday, Trey Brown is going to get out there.
We're looking at him again this week, yeah, to see how he competes and all that and how he does. Yes. Yeah, the answer is yes to that. I don't know if it'll happen or not, but he's competing to show that he's, you know, ready to go. So he had a good week last week, and this, from this point forward, he's physically and he's adapted back in so he could go.
So I don't know exactly what that means in terms of playing time. It's not going to be a start, that's for sure. Jackson will get the start again. But he is going to get out there and get some snaps as you slowly ease him back into game reps.
Patellar tendon, right? Is that what it was?
It was a patellar tendon injury. The Arizona game, we were at that game,
that's
Justin.
Right. That's
we
right.
sat there and watched, yep. And terribly, terribly sad and a scary sight to see because Trey Brown had really emerged.
So such a good, yeah.
And that's why there's so much optimism around him and so much excitement because of what he did in such a small sample size last year. He played in 5 games. He came in the Steelers game, and it really, I mean, he kind of changed the tone of the defense. Came in, hit a guy to break up a big 4th down conversion attempt by the Steelers. I think he kind of frustrated Chase Claypool a little bit, and then kind of forced his way into a starting spot. So he started 3 games, got hurt against Arizona. That is the big concern. There's excitement because of what he represents, but the big concern is that he hasn't played since November of last year. And if it takes that long to recover and get fully back up to speed, you wonder how long it'll take him to really make an impact in an NFL game.
Yeah, especially with Devontae Adams that you're about to face. Yeah, this is not a game to start against.
I think, yeah, he'll probably situationally come in, and I don't know what that is. Maybe a series. It won't be like the Michael Seahawks Jackson's were doing last year where they were alternating cornerbacks early on. Before Trey Brown kind of emerged, the Seahawks were alternating cornerbacks on possessions. That's why Trey Brown kind of started to get reps, because they would alternate him and Sidney Jones, and then he finally was, all right, I'm better than this guy, and Trey Brown took over. But it's not going to be like that. It'll be a couple snaps, and then maybe the next week against the Rams, you get more. And we're also just kind of assuming he wins the job. I'm not sure you can make that assumption, because we don't know what he looks like. We don't know what a new Trey Brown looks like out on the field. And Mike Jackson's held his own.
Yes.
He's done very well. But you kind of hope that the 4th round pick, the guy that they... fourth round pick, the guy that they identified and who the Seahawks have done so well recently at identifying cornerbacks. Two things this front office does well: cornerbacks and quarterbacks. They identify them well in the draft.
You're right, he was a 4th round.
Yeah, that was, and they only had 3 picks, and that was the one they really hit on in 2021. So that's why you hope that Trey Brown can win back this job and eventually take over. No slight on Mike Jackson, who has been a very great corner. He was on with Wyman and Bob yesterday, talked about, you know, fighting, competing for that job, but actually about the good relationship that he and Trey Brown have. That they know that once they're out there, they're competing, but they're pretty friendly off the field, and when they're not out on the field kind of fighting for a spot.
Position groups are like that. And you heard Pete mention it a couple weeks back, too, about Mike Jackson kind of having this emergence. And he's like, well, maybe it's the threat of Trey coming back. It's kind of lit the fire a bit. So, like, that's the Pete Carroll competition way.
He had such a great debut, too, this season with the 2 fumbles recovered against the Broncos. Yeah. So that's what's been exciting. But you do hope that a draft pick, and a pretty high one, a 4th round pick, that's a high draft pick, you hope that he can win that job. And that makes the secondary so much stronger when you look at Tariq Woolen and Trey Brown.
Yeah.
Those are your corners, hopefully. So we'll see what that means, because Trey Brown's kind of work his way in.
Yeah, game speed is...
You hope maybe by the Panthers game, right? You know, that's... He gets some snaps on Sunday. He plays a little bit more against the Rams. Assuming he progresses and there are no setbacks. All right, Panthers, 3 games from now, you're in. That would be a great game to get into, because the Panthers have no idea what they're doing.
True.
The Panthers are going to start...
Are they starting quarterback yet?
They did announce they're starting Sam Darnold.
Sam Darnold's back.
Sam Darnold's back. He was there. He lost his job. He's back again. So the Panthers are cycling through P.J. Walker, Baker Mayfield, and Sam Darnold.
Oh,
who knows who will be the quarterback in 3 weeks when they play the Seahawks here. I think that's a great game to get Trey Brown plenty of snaps, and you get him ready for a critical stretch, because the Seahawks are expecting to play postseason football. That's the expectation now. Expectations change. Before this season, You would have been scoffed at. You would have laughed if you said, yeah, the Seahawks are going to play a playoff game.
I did laugh at my friend Paul who called this at the beginning of the season. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
I mean, I audibly, cartoonishly laughed at him.
Yeah.
Doesn't look so dumb anymore.
No.
And
so
I'm the guy that wanted Baker Mayfield.
I didn't want Baker necessarily. I wanted Jimmy Garoppolo. But the fact that they're going to play meaningful football and you expect they play a playoff game, that's all right if Trey Brown doesn't get back for a few more weeks.
True.
You get him for maybe the final four of the regular season, which are key games, by the way. Because in that stretch, you have the Niners, which we've talked about, I think could decide the division. So you have the Niners, the Chiefs, the Jets, and then always a pesky Rams team. So if you get him back for those four, and he's the starting cornerback for those four games, and then he's still fresh because, hey, he's missed most of the season, you get a fresh Trey Brown in a playoff game. That would be an ideal scenario. So I think there's a reason to be optimistic about this defense.
Have that on your bingo card. Please come forward and pick my next lottery.
Oh, Trey Brown in a playoff game or just Seahawks playoff game?
Seahawks playoff game. And Trey Brown being, after the injury that he went through, I remember seeing the picture of him leaving the hospital with his knee up and the stitches on it saying, like, surgery went well, and thinking, oh, man, it's going to be a long time until we see him. Here it is.
Yeah, it's been now, I guess, over a year.
Yep.
So about a year and then a little bit over a year until he gets back onto the field.
And he had signed the 4-year deal.
And you didn't know. Wait, Trey Brown?
Yeah.
And that's a rookie contract.
The rookie. Yeah, the rookie. Signed his 4-year rookie. Yeah, the $41 million in, what is it? It's the injured reserve on the September 7th. So yeah, it has been a year.
Mm. Yeah. And you never really know the severity because some people recover from other, their patellar tendon strains, right? I mean, DK Metcalf had a patellar tendon thing. And now this was a full-on tear, obviously, or something serious enough that it kept him out that long. So you don't really know the recovery process. But the appeal of getting Trey Brown back and healthy and the fact that the Seahawks are likely going to be in a playoff game, and now should. They should be in a playoff game. We can call it. At this point of the season, it would be disappointing if the Seahawks don't make the playoffs. They're 6-4. They have two games against the Rams left, a Rams team that is just decimated by injuries, a game against the Raiders, a game against the Panthers. So you assume they make the playoffs. And you get Trey Brown back. You have Tariq Woolen, who has been solid, and that secondary becomes extremely appealing. And that's going to be tough. That's going to be tough for opposing teams to face when you do have a guy who was such an impact in a limited fashion last year. Just 3 starts, but clearly made a difference. So there's some good news. Trey Brown back out there. Pete Carroll said that they're going to see what they can get, and we don't know what that means. We'll be watching the snap count closely, though, this weekend against the Raiders. All right, time for Brock to join us. We're going to get into more of what we want to see. I don't want to call it the second half because we're more than halfway through the season. It's a 17-game season. Seahawks have played 10. What do you call it? Like the second act?
Yeah. It doesn't matter when the bye week is. I call it the second half.
Yeah. Second half, second act. We're going to get into our predictions and what we want to see out of certain players in the second half of the season and then continue to look at the key players that will define the Seahawks-Raiders matchup. It's the Brock and Salk Show. You're listening to Seattle Sports Station on 710 and seattlesports.com.